The Outdoor Gibbon, episode 14, knife making. Well, we've made it to March 2023. We're now, the Outdoor Gibbon podcast is now exactly 12 months old. So this is episode, we've managed to do 14 episodes. Thank you all for listening if you've got this far. Really happy that you're still with us. If you're just joining us on this episode, please go back and listen to the back catalogue. Hopefully this one kind of goes through my story of making knives and things I've done and how I got started in it, and hopefully it's an interesting one. Anyway, let's get this podcast started. Just thought I would cover my hobby that I've started and explain how I got involved in it, etc., etc. You may hear my dogs kicking around in the background as I'm actually trying to record this in a different location. And there are three spaniels moving about. You never know. They might start barking, but we'll cut those out if we do have that issue. Anyway, so how did I get involved in knife making? I suppose you have to look back to when I was a kid, and probably knives and pen knives and things like that weren't one of those restricted items. So probably from about the age of seven, my grandfather would have probably, I think he did, he gave me a little tiny pen knife. I think it was a pipe knife, actually. So one side was designed, had a big spike on it for cleaning the hole in a pipe, and the other side was a little tiny blade. And it was just commonplace to play with pen knives and things like that, learn about them. And gradually as I went on, I remember in my teenage years getting hold of a Swiss Champ, the biggest, I think, Swiss Army knife they made, with a huge number of accessories and things like that. And it came in a black leather pouch with a compass, a pen, a sharpening stone, a mirror for attracting attention and doing Morse code SOS and stuff like that. And it was just, it was commonplace for a child or teenager to have a pen knife. So knives carried on through, they've always been something that I've been used to having and using, and they've never been something that's been one of those restricted items. So I think as time went by, there was that TV show that came out, what was it, Forged in Fire, and you saw people, competitors, getting a piece of steel, heating it up, hammering it out, forging it, producing these absolutely fantastic blades. I thought, yeah, I kind of fancy having a go at making a knife. Didn't know really where to start, didn't have a forge. So before moving to Scotland, a friend of mine's a blacksmith down in Leicestershire, and I kind of said to him, this is what I want, and I'm looking for a piece of Damascus type of steel. And he goes, oh, I'll have a go at making something for you. So he produced me a copy blade with a really nice piece of steel in the core and a sort of a Damascus finish on the outside. He gave it to me sort of in its rough forged state, and I was like, that's not really what I want. So he put it on the sander and sanded it up. And I'm not quite, I think we kind of, he was building a rustic knife, and I wanted something that when you etched it, you saw all the Damascus in it. But it's still a really nice little knife. It's incredibly sharp and does everything you want. So with my, in sort of business, I repair and fix large biomass wood chip boilers, and they have these fantastic arms that move the fuel around in the fuel store, and they're made of very high quality spring steel. It's probably 2 or 3 mil thick, and it's probably exactly what you want for cutting a knife out of. So I'd found some templates of knives on the internet and printed those off. And one afternoon I kind of got the grinder out and just cut a rough shape out of a knife I was looking at. I think I just made a single knife, and I made two smaller knives as a test. I still didn't have a forge or any way of doing the process, and I think I cut the blanks out and then got sidetracked, and I left them on the side and didn't do anything with them for about sort of probably 12 to 18 months. And I was messing around with my lad outside, and I said, let's get make a charcoal forge. And we sort of got the compressor out, got some charcoal and a couple of bricks around it, got this thing piping hot, got these knife blanks out, heated them up, got them glowing cherry red, and dipped them in a can of engine oil. Didn't know if it worked, obviously remembering everything they'd said. Once they're glowing at the right colour, they'll not be magnetic anymore, so put a magnet near them. They weren't. Dipped them in the oil, got them out, filed them. They seemed hard enough, and finally got round to sort of going, well, I need to put a handle on them. And we chopped an apple tree down in the garden, and there was some sort of this apple wood left, so hadn't burnt it all on the fires, so took a piece of that, turned that into the first sort of set of handles. And they're quite nice knives. It's sort of a full-size blade and like a little companion blade. He obviously wanted one, so he's got his first knife out of that. Time went by, and probably another few years disappeared, and I thought, wow, yeah, I think we're on our way to Ireland, actually. We stopped at Bushware, and we bought a knife-making kit. Quite a nice kit. Wasn't anything too expensive. And he was like, oh, can we make this knife? I'm like, yeah, we'll make this knife at some point. Now, I have that word at some point, and it just kind of years go by at some point. It just doesn't happen. But what we did was drew a template of the knife, and when we got back over from Ireland, I cut a whole load of these out of the spring steel again. Cut the blanks, started to roughly grind the blanks, and that's where it stopped. They got put on the side, left. And that kind of brings us up to the wonderful thing of the pandemic. And finally, I was like, well, nothing much is happening. I've now got COVID. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to finish a set of knives. And finally, I actually got round to heat treating them in my little forge that I'd actually made that ran on a little bottle of gas. Got them up to temperature, dipped them in the oil again, got good hard blades out of that. Found a load of bits of wood that one of my customers had given to me. He'd kindly, because I kind of said about knife making, and he'd gone, oh, I'll give you some nice bits of elm and other stuff. So got these bits of wood out, remembered about some brass pins. I'd been to B&Q a couple of months before and brought some brass bar, and actually put these knives together. Now, for a first attempt, they're rustic, but they came out looking quite good. They seemed to sharpen up quite well and held a fantastic edge. So, yeah, that was my first set of blades, all messing around, like gluing and bits of wood together and stuff like that. And I think I'd been looking on the internet and seeing all these absolutely stunning knives that people had made. And I thought, well, do you know what? I'm not looking to make something that's absolutely fantastic, but something that's functional and works. So the first set were made, and I thought we'd give it a go, and they've been the ones I've been taking out stalking and using and testing and all the rest of it. Posted pictures up on social media, and I didn't realize they'd be quite such a hit. And I've had lots of people going, oh, do you sell knives and so on and so forth? And it's like, I'm not sure. It's one of those things. Is the heat treatment good enough? Is the knife good enough? What happens if I sell this knife and it breaks, or it doesn't hold an edge, or it chips? It's still at the early stages, and I know there's lots of people out there that keep going, oh, I'd like to buy a knife off you, but I'm still sort of dubious at the quality of the work that I've produced, and will it hold up? So the next phase was I was going to make another set of knives. So pretty much made, I think, three virtually identical knives. Somebody had asked for a straighter back, not a drop point on it. So I just roughed out another couple of blades that were a similar design, put those together, spent a bit more time polishing the handles and making them. And they look really, really smart. And I thought I'd get some feedback. So basically, a friend of mine's a butcher down in Leicestershire. When I was visiting, took them down and said, what did he think? And the first comment he came out with was, the handles are too short. And yes, where I'd mounted the actual handles on, if I'd made the handles probably a centimetre longer, they'd have sat better in the hand. But again, it was one of those things. It's trial and error when you're doing this, and you're trying to come up with a design for a blade and a handle. So got some good feedback. They're still nice blades. I think those ones will actually be will be given to my kids as sort of, I made these, here you go, these are your presents that your father made you, and hopefully they can hold on to them for a good number of years, and it's kind of a bit of a family heirloom. But again, I've learned so much in the process of doing this, and you haven't had to have lots of fancy kit. I've not got a fancy grinder. I've literally got a belt sander, and I do most of the shaping on that. And people have said, how do you do your grind? And it's like, well, it's all by eye. Nothing's done any other way. I don't have jigs to put them in. And I know some guys use jigs and have got bevels and different ways of setting these blade grinds up. But no, everything for me is done by eye. The shaping of the handles is, again, it's done by eye. And that's what makes them slightly different and quirky. And I don't think any knife I produce will ever look the same. So they are all one-off bespoke type of blades. So what do I plan to do next? Well, as I've had so much interest in these blades, I think if I actually can find the time, and one of those things that time is the only thing you can't create more of, then I will probably produce some more blanks, do another custom run of blades, and actually probably come to sell them. So there is a possibility that that I will actually fulfill some of the orders, and then there'll be a few to go up on the open market and be sold. I learned something new as well about like etching your logos on, using the vinyl printer, cut out the actual logo, stick it on, nothing special here, salt water and a battery charger, and you actually etch the steel. And I've had some quite good results, so I've actually managed to get my own logo onto the blade. So everything is tying together quite nicely. So yeah, in the future, we might make a few more. It's not something that I'm going to do lots of these knives. I kind of think they're a bit sort of special, and there'll be the occasional one-off. I did give one away for one of the competition prizes to the young lady that came up from down south. So she got one of the first knives. Again, I don't know how it's holding up. The downside to these blades is, well, it's not a downside, I suppose it's actually quite good, but they're actually high carbon steel. So they're not your stainless steel. They will rust. So if you get it wet and you leave it wet, it will rust. But on the flip side of that, the edge that it actually takes is like a razor blade. You only have to sharpen them, or even just strop them on a leather strop, and you're back to that high quality sharp edge again. The downside is that if you don't look after that blade, it will rust, and it will rust very easily and very quickly. But saying that, so let's look at the one I've been using mostly. I sort of built the first one with a dark elm handle, two pins. It's quite a nice weighted knife. It balances well in your hand. Sharpened it up, and I think that I've probably got to about deer number six on it now. And all I've done is rubbed it across a leather strop a few times. It's really just to see how long I can keep stropping it for before I've actually got to resharpen it. And that's not bad going, really. I remember other knives I've got, like my plastic-handled Moiras and things like that. And those, you've got to sharpen them. They're stainless steel. They don't really hold the edge as well. You do a couple of deer and you need it sharpened again. But I'm quite impressed at my own homemade knife, just with a leather strop and some paste on it, and yeah, you're getting that razor sharp edge back up no problem at all, and it's good for the next deer. I don't have time to turn this into a business, and I think there's so many guys out there that do an absolutely fantastic job of making some beautiful knives that I'm not in any way trying to compete with them. However, the only thing I can say is having a knife that you've made or isn't massively expensive and isn't so beautiful, you're not so concerned about actually losing it or misplacing it. Sort of, you look at some of these manufacturers and they are absolute work of arts. But when you talk to the people that own them, it's like, do you use your really expensive knife? Oh, no, I bought it, never used it, or maybe I've got one deer with it. I'm fear of God for losing it on the hill. So what I've done is I've gone back to using my cheap Moira or whatever plastic knife again. It's like, oh, okay, so you bought this really beautiful knife, but you're never going to use it. Whereas the sort of the thing that I'm making, it's like, yeah, you can use it. All right, it might have cost you £100 or something like that by the time you've taken my time and effort into it. But if you lose it, it's like, it's not the end of the world. You've lost the knife. You get on, you get another one, and you move on. But yeah, it's that's what I made them for. They're made for me, just to mess around with a hobby and just to see where it goes. But if people have shown an interest in them, I might make a few and actually get a few quid back for all the bits and the time that I've taken into actually making these knives in the first place. I suppose the next thing that I want to do is the leather work for them. So I bought a load of knife sheaths on Amazon, because they were cheap. But they are cheap, and you look at them, nice leather, and well, they're sort of well made, but they're not designed for that particular knife. They're a bit loose fitting. They look a bit cheap. Whereas I've seen other guys that make their own, they make the knife and then they make a sheath for it and things like that. And it sets the whole package off. And I've already found out the ones I've been making and using, the sheaths aren't particularly good fitting. You can lie back on the hill or something like that, or catch yourself on a funny angle, your blade falls out. While I was out doing the wild boar, it was very dark, trying to get the blade out of my sheath. I literally must have caught the little flat round strap that's supposed to hold it in. Well, the knife was that sharp, it just sliced straight through it. So by the time I got home, I was looking, going, oh, I actually cut straight through the leather part of the sheath on there. So again, that's something else to try. One of those cold winter nights when we're up here in Aberdeen, get myself doing the leather work and get knackered fingertips with the pushing the threads through and all the rest of it. Or try and find somebody local that actually enjoys doing leather work and maybe get them to make me a bunch of bespoke custom leather sheaths for these knives, just to set them off that little bit more. That might be the next phase of it. But I've also looked at wanting to do like the plastic heat formed sheath as well, just because one, they're completely clean and sterile, you can chuck them in the dishwasher and stuff like that. But again, it's another bit of hobby time that adds to my incredibly long list of things that I get up to, and it's actually just trying to keep on top of everything else. It's there's never enough hours in the day to do all of this. But the knife making has been one of those, it's been something that's been quite fun, and actually to be able to use them and to try them out, and every one that's been produced so far has been pretty good. I think the very first knife is a bit soft, it's not very well hardened, and I think I got all my proportions wrong, length of the blade, length of the handle. But it was, as I said, it's been a learning curve all the way through, and getting some feedback, positive feedback from different people who've held them in their hand and have said, oh, your handles are too short or your handles are too long. That's absolutely fantastic, and it's something that you just can't really do without, because at the end of the day you could carry on making these things thinking they're great and then they're actually useless and they don't work. So yes, there are more in the pipeline, and for anybody that's not seen them, I think there's a number of photos on my Instagram feed of these knives, but I might do another post about them shortly, just to follow on from this podcast, so that it keeps everything sort of updated and people can actually see what's going on. But yeah, that's where the knife making fun came. It was more out of boredom and wanting to try my hand at another skill, and I think I was so enthralled by the Forged in Fire show that had a go at it. I think that might be my later on in my career, is actually to actually forge a proper knife from a piece of steel and actually, instead of grinding the material away, which I do at the moment, is to take that and actually hammer it out. But I'm trying to find an anvil, and they're like as rare as anything or incredibly expensive. My forge seems to work quite well, so I've got no issues there getting everything up to temperature. but it's just trying to find the anvil and again the time to spend outside turning a piece of steel into an actual blade. But watch this space. We might have a go at that over the summer if we can get everything sorted out. I suppose this hobby was just a bit of fun. Turn my hand at something, have a go at it. It'd be a skill I'd like to pass on to my kids. I know my son's had a go and he's made a few things. Straight away he went to try and make something incredibly large and wanted to make a big dagger of some description. Probably quite hard and quite difficult. It was very difficult to get straight edges on it, but we had a go and he seemed quite happy with that. But again, it's one of those skills that I think if I can pass this down the generation, and it's only my way of doing it, there's probably better ways and different ways, but at least they have another hands-on application that they can use in their life, and I think that's really important. So yeah, it's just a bit of fun, that's all these things are, and I'm not getting too caught up in it and not looking to make absolute perfection out of them. That brings us to the end of another podcast. Thanks for listening. Buck season is rapidly approaching as March is running out very quickly. The nights are starting to get lighter, which is always good, and so are the mornings. We'll soon be to that point where you blink and you miss it, and we'll be in the summer here, and it's virtually daylight all the time. But for now, we will leave it there, and we will see you on the next one.